Festival Theater. And here is your host, William Hutt.
Good evening, and welcome once again to Festival Theater. Tonight, we introduce to the radio audience from coast to coast one of the treasure troves of our time, the incredible murder of Cardinal Tosca, a hitherto undiscovered adventure of Sherlock Holmes. It is no secret to connoisseurs of the Wizard of Baker Street that many of the master's greatest adventures are tantalizingly referred to throughout the published works of his devoted chronicler, Dr. Watson, but the stories themselves have never seen the light of day. For over 60 years, a maddened world has tried to imagine possible connections between the politician, the lighthouse, and the trained cormorant, or guessed in shudders what the Red Leech really did to Crosby, the banker. Only to be told that Watson's famous tin dispatch box, the repository of all the hidden cases, had been utterly destroyed by bombs in the London Blitz, and that the hints of lost cases must now tantalize us forever. But the time has come to reveal that the immortal dispatch box has survived and is currently in the possession of playwrights Alden Nolan and Walter Learning. Already admired for their version of Frankenstein in their powerful original play, The Dollar Woman, last winter on Festival Theater, Nolan and Learning have collaborated again to dramatize the newly discovered adventure, this time, I may add, with no intervention whatsoever from Dr. Watson's front man, a certain Dr. A.C. Doyle. First staged last year at Theater New Brunswick, The Incredible Murder of Cardinal Tosca comes to you now in radio version by the authors, in a CBC stereo production from Halifax by Elizabeth Fox, starring John Neville as Holmes with Dan MacDonald as Dr. Watson. Come with me now to the vaults of Cox & Company at Charing Cross, London, to a certain tin box where a beloved, now recovered ghost is rising. You'll recognize him easily. It was not for nothing that the master called him the one fixed point in a changing world. Ladies and gentlemen, I have the pleasure to reintroduce Dr. John H. Watson.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes was in active practice as a consulting detective for 23 years, from 1880 until 1903. For 17 of those years, I, John H. Watson, enjoyed the singular privilege of being his friend, his confidant, and in some small measure, his colleague. It is curious that during Sherlock Holmes' entire career, there was only one client whom he served on two separate occasions. I refer to His Holiness Pope Leo XIII. In 1888, there came the affair of the Vatican cameos. And in 1895, there occurred the incredible murder of Cardinal Tosca. Hitherto, my notes on both cases have lain in an old tin dispatch box, a relic of my Indian Army days, in the vaults of Cox and Company at Charing Cross, London. As a result of the startling events of the past week, I now propose to put those notes which relate to the Cardinal's death in order, and to prepare a fair copy for the perusal of succeeding generations. I say succeeding generations, because the fate not only of men but of nations should tremble in the balance if certain of these matters became public knowledge in these present perilous times. Sherlock Holmes never had a busier year than 1895. The smells and sounds of the motor car had not as yet begun to compete with the smells and sounds of the horse-drawn hansoms and four-wheelers in London streets. It was still possible for those who shared Sherlock Holmes' dislike of the telephone to conduct their affairs by telegram. A man might, if he wished, send out for a dinner consisting of pheasant, woodcock, and pâté de foie gras pie, and for a shilling or two extra have delivered a bottle of excellent French wine to wash down his meal. Of course, as always, there was a darker side to life. It was scarcely safe to ride on the Underground Railway because of the bombs planted there by anarchists and Irish Republicans. There were parts of London where only a very bold or very foolish man should have ventured alone after dark. There was a revival of Satanism and witchcraft, half silly and half dangerous, under the leadership of men such as Aleister Crowley, whose followers believed him to be the great beast of the apocalypse. I see from my notes that my introduction to the case of Cardinal Tosca came 19 years ago, on a warm June morning, when I returned to 221B Baker Street after spending a few days out of town.
From the music, the game is afoot again, Mrs. Hudson.
I don't know, Doctor. But he's not had so much as a wink of sleep or a bite of food for 3 days.
He must be on the track of very big game indeed.
Yeah, at least it's better for him than when he's bored and taking those terrible injections.
Oh, the less said about that, the better, Mrs. Hudson.
Of course, Doctor.
However, it will comfort you to know that a remarkable new medicine has been developed for the treatment of cocaine addiction.
Oh, what is it?
It's called heroin.
It'll be a blessing for many a poor soul. Hmm. Will there be anything else, sir?
I'll ring if we need anything.
Try to get him to eat something.
Yes. Holmes? Holmes, you there? Of course he's there, Watson.
My dear fellow, of course I'm here.
I hope I didn't interrupt you.
You did indeed interrupt me, Doctor. However, that does not lessen my pleasure at having you home.
I must apologize for not letting you know I had to leave town for a few days. Actually, I had to catch the train...
To Portsmouth, where your old army orderly, Murray, the man who saved your life when you were wounded in Afghanistan, lay perilously ill. I'm delighted to perceive that his condition has improved.
Holmes, you never cease to astonish me. How could you possibly have known about poor Murray?
When I observe that an old soldier has reverted to carrying his handkerchief in his sleeve as he did in his army days, I may safely assume that something has reminded him of his military past.
Well.
Furthermore, you were limping slightly a moment ago, although it has been some time since your old wound actually pained you. The inference was fairly obvious.
But how did you deduce that Murray was ill and was on the road to recovery?
Doctor, you took your medical bag.
Oh, of course.
Moreover, the right shoulder of your coat bears an inordinate amount of lint, such as can be found only on the seats of a British railway carriage.
Good heavens.
Evidently, you slept very peacefully during your journey home, something you'd scarcely have done if you were still concerned for your old comrade.
Extraordinary.
Elementary. Ah, that will be my visitor.
Visitor, eh? It's not difficult for me to deduce that you've been occupied during my absence. May I ask what you're working on?
A number of things. Among them, I was successful in recovering a packet of somewhat compromising letters for Mr. Oscar Wilde.
Compromising? I'm not surprised.
In one of them, he describes a very plain Cockney stable boy as being like a hyacinth, all white and gold.
Abominable.
Extravagant.
Fellow ought to be in prison.
Don't you think that's rather a severe punishment for a bad simile?
Mr. Holmes, there's a strange gentleman to see you.
Strange?
Yeah. Half his face is covered with some kind of mask.
Ah, that will be Colonel Dashwood. I've been expecting him. Show him up, please, Mrs. Hudson.
Yes, sir. May I bring anything, sir? Some beef tea, perhaps?
Later, Mrs. Hudson.
A poached egg?
No.
Very well, then.
Out of my way, woman! Holmes!
I haven't got all day.
I'm delighted to see you again, Colonel. There are so few occasions nowadays when one can mix business with pleasure.
I find your sarcasm rather childish.
Oh, dear. I shall have to do better. I don't believe you've met my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
Well, how do you do, Colonel?
I do as I bloody well please.
Oh. Perhaps you'd prefer that I withdraw.
Not at all, my dear fellow.
I didn't come here to natter, Holmes. The price is £5,000. Take it or leave it.
You jest, of course.
The devil I do. Either I get my £5,000, or your chum Wilde will trade his velvet suit for a prison uniform.
Against my better judgment, I've been given authority to offer you £10 to compensate you for any expense you've incurred in recovering Mr. Wilde's manuscripts.
Wilde had better not play games with me. I won't stand for it.
Mr. Wilde, if you please.
He could be Lord Wilde, for all I care. I warn you that I am not a man to be trifled with.
You had best take the £10, Colonel. You'll not get a farthing more.
Then you had better hand your client a loaded pistol and advise him to use it on himself, for he is a ruined man.
Tut! The moment the manuscripts are back in their author's possession, I shall urge him to publish them as a suite of prose poems. If he calls them hymns to Apollo, not even Queen Victoria will be shocked.
You've not seen the last of me, Holmes. Our paths will cross again.
The fellow's a dangerous lunatic.
Most entertaining chap, however.
Why does he wear that hideous mask?
He was once the handsomest officer in the lifeguards. His avocation was seduction until a lady he ruined threw vitriol in his face.
Good Lord. No wonder the man's insane.
It did rather sour his disposition.
But, Holmes, I don't understand. You told me you had recovered Wilde's letters.
And so I have. I was amusing myself at the Colonel's expense.
And how did you recover them?
Burglary, with the unwitting assistance of the Colonel's head house parlourmaid, to whom I had become engaged.
Engaged? To be married?
Yes, I was disguised as a footman from a neighbouring house.
If you'll forgive my saying so, Holmes, I think that was downright caddish of you.
Not at all, Doctor. I assure you that by now my ex-fiancée has found solace in the arms of my hated rival, the postman. But come, pray fill your pipe from the Persian slipper, and let me tell you about a far more important case. Oh. Imagine, if you can, that you are an elderly priest of the Church of Rome. You go into your church one morning to say Mass, and there you find that the statuary has been smashed as though by a madman armed with a sledgehammer, the sanctuary has been violated, and the sacred host obscenely profaned. And more shocking still, you discover that one of your young curates, Father Chidiock Tichborne, is in the church...
Dead?
No, kneeling half-naked before two black candles, babbling like a madman, an inverted cross cut into his chest, a circlet of iron around his brow.
Why a circlet of iron?
For protection against the fiends from hell by any who read from the Red Book of Appin.
The Red Book of Appin?
The most terrible of all the ancient manuals of witchcraft.
Well, this is monstrous, Holmes.
What might have been your conclusion had you been that elderly priest?
Well, that the young fool of a curate had fallen in with those beastly Satanists and had got far more than he bargained for.
Quite so. Well done, Watson.
Well, then where's the mystery?
I meant that you were correct as to the conclusions reached by the elderly priest.
Oh, you have a different theory, then.
You should know by now, Doctor, that I never form a theory until all the facts are in my possession. Young Hopkins is conducting the investigation for Scotland Yard... Yesterday, at his invitation, I took the train down to Surrey to see the unfortunate Father Tichborne. His sister Violet has moved him to a cottage and is, without great success, attempting to restore his mental and physical well-being.
Well, that must be hard on her. Is she a nurse?
I think not, but she does seem to know what she's about.
Good.
She also refuses to believe that her brother could be guilty of such monstrous behaviour.
Well, that's not unnatural.
Perhaps... She is a most remarkable woman, this sister of Father Chidiock Tichborne.
In what way? Is she beautiful?
I believe that her bone structure and the texture and color of her skin would please most men.
Holmes, there are times when I could swear that you were born on another planet.
Father Titchbourne appears to be afflicted with a most distressing attack of brain fever. In the daytime, he becomes almost lucid. Each night, he resumes his ravings. His delirium is a singular thing. It's as though a finger were still tapping at the telegraph key, but all the wires were down. He cries out again and again, "The eagle has two heads. It is he who partakes of the blood."
Crowley and his witchcraft warlords are always blathering about blood. Goat's blood, bat's blood, toad's blood.
God's blood! What has become of the brains my maker gave me? Doctor, once again I am in your debt.
I have no doubt that the connection between toad's blood and brain fever is a perfectly self-evident one to a logical mind. However...
This is one of the candles from the church. As you see, it is black. Mm-hmm. And this white candle is from the unfortunate curate's sick room.
Well, surely you've already subjected both to chemical tests for poison?
Of course, and found nothing.
Well, then I fail to see...
I made the unforgivable mistake of overlooking the obvious. A child would have lit the candles. I did not. Doctor, I beg you to assist me in a small experiment.
Well, I'm always happy to be of any service to you.
I must warn you that this could be dangerous.
We've hunted dangerous game together before.
So we have, Doctor. There. The candles are lit. We shall put one here and one here. Pray seat yourself directly in front of the white candle. And I shall sit in front of the black. We are about to engage in a little exercise in the ancient art of witch-finding. Let us sit perfectly still and breathe deeply while each observes the other closely. How do you feel, Watson?
I'm not sure. A bit giddy, perhaps. That could be only my imagination.
Do you perceive any change in me?
None. I know it's absurd of me, Holmes, but this experiment's beginning to frighten me.
Yes.
There's evil here. I can sense it. Unspeakable.
We must blow out our candles. I believe we've proved that my suspicions were correct. It would be folly to continue. Watson, can you hear me? Watson, your candle. To the window, man.
Out of my way! Gurney horsemen at both ends of the valley! God in heaven, we mustn't let them take us alive! I've seen what they do to their prisoners! My saber! You black-hearted Ghazi devil!
Watson, it's me, Holmes!
You're not massacring women and children now, you blackguard!
Watson!
Both of you.
Don't worry. Don't worry, madam. I'll protect you.
It's all right, Mrs. Hudson.
Mr. Holmes, what in heaven's name has been going on here?
You could say that the doctor and I called up the devil.
Oh, you haven't hurt him.
No, no. I merely quieted him temporarily. The aid of the ancient Japanese art of Beritsu. You'll be all right in a moment. If you'd be so kind, a small glass of brandy.
Of course. I must have the strangest lodgers of any landlady in England. Candles that wear masks, gentlemen calling up the devil. Here, drink this, Doctor. That's a good boy.
Thank you.
Feeling better, lad?
I'm fine now, Mrs. Hudson.
Then I'll go back to my kitchen. You wouldn't care for a bit of toasted cheese, then, Mr. Holmes?
No, thank you.
If you die of starvation, it'll be through no fault of mine.
Holmes, what's in that candle?
The effects indicate that it is a chemical derivative of a root whose Latin name is Sanguis Lucifero.
The blood of Lucifer.
The Lao Tor tribesmen of Si Kiang, who use it in their manhood initiation ceremonies, know it as Nal Lo Ning Na, the wine of the black gods.
Now we know why Father Titchborn's delirium worsens at night.
Yeah, this drug was distilled from its natural state by someone singularly adept at chemistry. touch the wick. Taste it. It's quite harmless unless combusted.
Sugar.
The villain broke bits from a sugar loaf and soaked them in the chemical liquid, then cast them in the candles in such a way that they'd ignite at predetermined intervals.
Now why wasn't the sister affected?
The odds were against her being present at the moment when the poison was ignited. Moreover, she'd have had to sit very close to the flame and breathe very deeply of its fumes, a highly unlikely exercise to perform while officiating in a sick room.
But why would anyone go to such lengths to destroy an obscure clergyman?
There are times when the king does not consider it beneath his dignity to remove a pawn. Now, I'm afraid, I must leave you.
Where are you off to?
To Surrey.
Without me?
Do you feel up to a railway journey?
I feel absolutely fit.
Then let us set off for Waterloo Station. We can save Father Tichborne. I suggest you bring along your old service revolver.
Oh, yes.
Inspector Hopkins and Miss Violet Tichborne.
Mr. Holmes, my brother is dead.
Miss Tichborne and I found his body not 40 minutes ago. We came straight here.
Then I have failed you, Miss Tichborne. If I had not been so damnably slow in finding the poison...
Poison? He hanged himself.
No, Stanley. Chidiock would never have taken his own life. Suicide is a mortal sin.
Not when it's committed in a fit of madness.
He was murdered.
Inspector, you say that he hanged himself. Where and how did he accomplish this?
Good Lord, Holmes, have a care for the lady's sensibilities.
Perhaps you'd prefer to step into the next room for a moment, Miss Tichborne?
I should much prefer to remain here, Mr. Holmes. I assure you that I'm not in the habit of fainting, but I should like to sit down.
I believe you'll find this chair quite comfortable.
Thank you.
Would you like a glass of water?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
I beg your pardon. Miss Tichborne, may I introduce my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson?
How do you do, Miss Tichborne?
Now, Hopkins, let us hear about it, and I implore you to be precise as to details.
Well, he must have managed to crawl out of bed, you
my
see.
My dear young Hopkins, it's your observations that concern me, not your assumptions.
I'm sorry. He was found hanging outside the window. Oh. The room contained a rope for use in the event of fire. One end of it was fixed to a bolt in the floor. The other was tied around his neck.
He didn't have the strength to drag himself to the window, Stanley. I know how weak he was. I had to feed him.
Miss Tichborne, I have reason to believe that your brother had a pitiless and resourceful enemy.
People are not ordinarily murdered by their friends, Mr. Holmes.
On the contrary, my dear young lady, the vast majority of murders are committed by close friends or relatives.
Chidiock had neither friends nor enemies in England. He'd lived for years in Rome and Vienna, and I am his only surviving relative.
Then, despite your conviction that he was murdered, you know of no one who might have had a motive to kill him?
No one. Except myself.
Oh, don't talk nonsense, Violet. No.
He owns substantial estates in Devonshire. As his sister, I inherit everything. Isn't that motive enough?
You are not under suspicion, Miss Tichborne.
I should hope not.
An impatient heiress would never have gone to so much trouble.
Or used a method so certain to attract attention.
Precisely. She'd have merely put arsenic in his soup if she was simple, or arrange for him to have a fatal accident if she was clever.
But if it was murder, why in the name of all that's wonderful was he hanged?
Why does the farmer hang the crows in the corn?
To frighten other crows away.
Then you believe this was meant to be a warning. But to whom?
That we shall discover. How far did Father Tichborne fall, Inspector?
Exactly 6 feet 9 inches.
Good work. How much did he weigh?
11 stone.
Where is the rope?
I sent it to the yard.
I should be greatly obliged if you would go and fetch it.
Ah, yes, sir.
You can perform me another small service by stopping at the Leadenhall Market, where you will find Mr. James Berry, a purveyor of bacon. Request that he come to Baker Street at once.
A bacon seller?
There's always method in Holmes' madness, Miss Tichborne.
And a bit of madness in my method, eh, Doctor?
I'll be back shortly.
Inspector, perhaps you could see me to a hotel.
Oh, of course, forgive me, I should have realized you'd not wish to return to Surrey. Will the Northumberland do?
That will be fine, thank you. Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, my dear.
Miss Tichborne, it is never easy to find adequate words at such a time. It is more difficult still when one feels, as I do, that he might have prevented the tragedy. I'm a miserable bungler. Perhaps it is time that I closed down this agency and retired to keep bees on the Sussex Downs.
You mustn't blame yourself, Mr. Holmes. I ask only that you find my brother's murderer.
I promise you that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
damnably confusing young woman. Charming one minute, disconcerting the next.
The most charming woman I ever knew was hanged for poisoning her three small children for £30 in insurance money.
You're jesting, Holmes, and in rather bad taste.
Not at all. She collected the sulphur from matchsticks and added it to their milk.
How ghastly.
Yet patience and persistence are almost universally looked upon as estimable qualities. Think of the hours the lady must have spent painstakingly scraping thousands of matchsticks with an exceedingly sharp razor. We must admire such industry, however much we may deplore its purpose.
Holmes, if I did not know you so well, I should swear that you had no heart.
I concede that Miss Tichborne is a most interesting specimen of the sex.
She must have loved her brother very deeply.
Of that there can be no doubt. I studied her as we stood over his sickbed. Her love for Chidiock Tichborne was terrible in its intensity. Yet when he died horribly, she did not shed a tear.
How could you possibly have known that?
She indulges in the somewhat absurd practice of tinting her cheeks with rouge. The rouge was well set, indicating that it had been applied some time before the discovery of the tragedy. I noticed when she kissed me just now, it was not even faintly smeared.
As a doctor, I've seen wives receive the word that they were widows without a change in expression. They were quite dazed by the tragedy that had befallen them.
Miss Tichborne, on the other hand, is very much in command of herself.
Oh, yes, but then she's what the newspapers call the new woman of the 90s.
How did you ascertain that?
I merely glanced at the middle and index fingers of her right hand.
Dear me, and what did you see there?
A faint but distinctive stain. I believe you will agree, Holmes, that a young woman who is so unconventional as to smoke cigarettes is very likely to be unconventional in her behavior also.
Excellent, Doctor.
Rudimentary.
However, I find it more significant that the lady has recently dyed her hair and that her spectacles contain ordinary window glass.
You can't come in here.
It would seem that we have another visitor, and an unwelcome one.
What business is
it? Not in my house, you haven't.
Surely the rat at your service, me good sirs. Rat is me name, and rat is me racket. With this here rat pole, I'll have you fixed up in no time.
Rat catcher in my house, Mr. Holmes. Have you ever seen so much as a mouse in the 14 years that you've lived here?
You've got the wrong house, my man.
What is this? 221B Baker Street, ain't it?
It is.
Well, I've come to the right place.
This is too much, Mr. Holmes. Now, I've put up with a lot, Lord knows. I thought I'd seen everything the day you sat there in your dressing gown and fired your pistol at the wall until you spelled out the Queen's initials.
Blimey.
But if you brought rats into my house, I swear I'll put you out.
Tut, tut, dear lady. I assure you there are no rats here.
No.
Apart from the dead ones in our friend's bag. I'll explain everything later.
Oh, rat catchers, men in masks, devil worship.
Now, what have we here? Extraordinary. I've never seen rats their equal except in Tim Donovan's Doss House in Dorset Street.
The John L. Sullivan of rat catchers, I am.
Upon my word, this fine fellow reminds me of the late, lamented Professor Moriarty. Observe the eyes, Watson. And the mouth. Particularly the incisors. There's a distinct family resemblance. Or could this be the professor reincarnated?
Disgusting creatures.
It's very singular that there's no species for which mankind has greater detestation and none whose habits and tastes are so similar to our own.
Yeah, he's yours for a bob, Gov.
Oh, in my experience, rat catchers are ordinarily paid for removing rats rather than for supplying them.
My dear Watson, we must remember that this is an unusual rat catcher indeed.
That's right, Gov.
Your Eminence, I am at your service.
It's a joy to see you again, Holmes.
Doctor, our humble rooms are being honored by the presence of His Eminence Giovanni Cardinal Tosca, titular Archbishop of Cappadocia, Privy Secretary of State to His Holiness Pope Leo XIII, and Prefect of the Supreme Military Council of the Sacred Congregation for the Preservation of the Faith.
Good Lord!
Quite so, Doctor. How long did it take you to find me out, Holmes?
30 seconds, perhaps.
Then I did very well. Those I intended to deceive will be deceived.
I should have taken longer had we not been gravediggers together in 79.
Gravediggers?
In Hamlet, at the old Duke of Kendal Theatre.
For 10 shillings a week.
Yes, and half of it taken back in fines by the actor-manager.
Your Eminence has been an actor, then, eh?
The Cardinal has been many things. Actor, soldier, missionary in the jungles of Brazil.
Where I may have learned more from the witch doctors than they learned from me.
I propose that we have a sip of brandy in honor of this occasion.
Ah. Perhaps His Eminence would care for something a little less...
No, brandy will be fine, thank you. I see you remember my weakness for brandy, Holmes.
I do indeed. Gentlemen. If I may offer one small suggestion, Your Eminence, in future you would be wise to remember that a rat catcher's boots, the left one in particular, are certain to be marked with numerous rodent bites. Yours are disreputable enough, to be sure, but alas, unbitten.
That small suggestion could one day save my life.
How so?
Doctor, the sacred congregation of which His Eminence has the honor to be prefect is nothing less than the Pope's secret service.
I had never dreamed that such an organization existed.
We have served the church since the time of Charlemagne, Doctor.
And at times they make the Russian secret police look like a pack of schoolboys playing at hares and hounds. Young Father Tichborne was, of course, your agent.
One of our best men.
Your church is still interested in witchcraft?
Oh, no, it's the least of our concerns.
Pray tell me, Your Eminence, what Father Tichborne's presence in England had to do with the Emperor of Austria.
What makes you think that the Emperor is involved in this?
Tichborne told me.
When?
When crying in his delirium, the eagle has two heads. It is he who partakes of the blood.
Of course. The double-headed eagle is the emblem of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. But what's the significance of he who partakes of the blood?
According to the Roman Catholic ritual, the emperor is the only layman who is permitted to partake of the sacramental wine. Is that not so, Your Eminence?
Yes, Holmes.
I begin to understand the involvement of the Pope's secret service.
The emperor is the most powerful Catholic on earth.
He's apart from the Pope.
He can be more powerful sometimes. He has the authority to veto the election of a pope.
Good heavens.
Lucifer aspired to usurp the throne of God. Our adversary means to become ruler not only of a great empire, but of the Christian church.
I find that incredible.
Consider the facts, Doctor. The emperor's only son, the Crown Prince Rudolf, was shot to death at Meierling in 1888.
Oh, that was suicide.
Oh, no. The Crown Prince and his mistress, the Countess Maria Vetzera, were murdered in his hunting lodge. To avoid scandal, two officers of the imperial household dressed the Countess's corpse. They carried her to an open carriage, sat the corpse on the seat between them, and drove down the mountain to a railway station. There they carried her, as before, to a compartment in a train, and again sat with her, braced between them. It was thus they delivered her to her parents, who buried her at night. That was 7 years ago.
Appalling.
And more recently, the Emperor's wife, the Empress Elizabeth, was stabbed to death at Geneva, and in a singularly macabre way. A workman bumped against her as she walked towards her yacht. She walked on, smiling, completely unaware that she had been stabbed through the heart by a knife almost as thin as a wire. Minutes later, she died.
Robbed of her life and her death.
Yes. Now, the entire staff of the imperial household has been changed from aide-de-camp to page boys. Our agents inform me that the emperor has ceased to visit the woman who has been his mistress for the past 30 years. And finally, there's the last message Tichborne sent to me before he left Vienna for London. Wilhelm Bauer, outstanding as Richard III at the Theatre Royal. What does all this suggest to you?
I'm completely at a loss.
Holmes?
Two things. Firstly, Bauer could never be outstanding as Richard. And secondly, there is no Theatre Royal in Vienna. However, I believe that at this point we might enlighten ourselves considerably by examining the current year's file of the Illustrated London News. Here we are. January, February... March, April, May. The March edition for you, Your Eminence.
Very well.
April edition for you, Doctor. Oh, and the May edition for me.
May I ask what we're looking for?
Photographs of the Emperor Franz Joseph, my dear fellow. The Chicago World's Fair. The new Prime Minister of Canada, Sir Mackenzie Bowell. A dour-looking fellow. The Queen picnicking in the Highlands with her gilly, Mr. John Brown. Both of them looking just a trifle tiddly. Here we have it. The Austro-Hungarian Emperor reviewing his Croatian troops.
And here he is at a command performance in the Imperial Opera House.
Fascinating.
What do you see?
As you may know, I published two trifling monographs on the variability of the human ear, the most distinctive part of the body and the only part that never changes from birth to death. According to these photographs, the imperial ears underwent an astonishing transformation between April and May.
My suspicions were correct. The emperor has been replaced by an imposter.
The actor, Bauer.
Exactly. Holmes, this could be the most important case of your career. The future of the world is at stake.
Only one man possesses the genius to conceive and carry out such a monstrous plan. Moriarty.
Moriarty?
But he plunged to his death at the Reichenbach Falls 4 years ago.
Ah, Doctor, but so did I. Well,
so everyone believed. But you saw Moriarty die.
I know. However, it must have been an imposter. A mere pawn.
How can you be sure?
When you have eliminated the impossible, what remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth.
Who is this Moriarty? I've never heard of him.
Moriarty is the Napoleon of crime. A spider crouched at the center of a web whose poisonous strands extend into three continents. The greatest conspirator who ever lived. The organizing brain behind half the devilment between here and Constantinople. I must confess that life has been singularly dull without the professor. I'm rather looking forward to our reunion.
Reunion?
I propose to invite Professor Moriarty to call upon us at Baker Street tonight.
How do you intend to get in touch with him?
Nothing simpler. I shall merely dispatch a telegram to his brother, who is always to be found at his club in St. James Street.
Oh, Moriarty will never accept your invitation.
He'll be here tonight. I promise you that. And, of course, we shall also expect your eminence.
I shall look forward to meeting the gentleman.
I shall also invite Inspector Hopkins and Miss Tichborne. I propose to demonstrate to her how her brother was driven mad.
Miss Tichborne?
Yes, the priest's sister.
Tichborne's only sister is dead.
Dead?
Yes, quite dead.
Ah, time to resume your rat-catcher disguise.
Yes.
Here's a shilling for you. Be off with you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Any time I can be of assistance, just you call.
Inspector Hopkins and Mr. Berry.
Yeah, ma'am. Here's me card in case you should ever require me services.
Out, you rat-catchers. Target practice in the sitting room.
There's a criminal type if I ever saw one.
One of my many sources of information. Mr. Berry, it was kind of you to come.
I'm always more than happy to lend an hand to Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Why, you and me is labourers in the same vineyard, you might say.
What's he talking about, Holmes?
Until very recently, Mr. Berry had the honour to be the public hangman doctor.
Upon my word.
I liked the work well enough, but it kept me away from home too much. It was Monday in Devonshire, Tuesday in Yorkshire, Wednesday in Edinburgh, and Thursday in Cardiff. I missed the wife and the nippers. And then there was Ireland. Would you believe I had to disguise myself as a woman to get in and out of Dublin alive?
The Irish are a singular people. But come, let us get down to business. Hopkins, pray allow Mr. Berry to examine the rope.
Yes, sir.
Indian hemp.
But not the best quality. Huh? Although it would do in a pinch. Half an inch thick. Ought to be quarter of an inch thicker for best results. One of my ropes did me 16 jobs.
Good heavens.
Nowadays, government makes you burn them after a job. Waste of the taxpayers' money, if you ask me.
Does it not tell you anything?
It's a classic hangman's knot.
Are you suggesting that a professional executioner...
A professional doesn't have time for that sort of thing anymore. I always used a brass ring with a leather washer to keep it from slipping. Beats a knot 6 ways to Sunday.
Mr. Berry, let us assume that you were given this rope with this knot and asked to hang a man weighing 11 stone. Let us further assume that you were instructed to drop him precisely 6 feet 9 inches. What would be the result?
Well then, Mr. Holmes, it's not as simple as that. There are some questions I'd have to ask first. Had he recently tried to cut his throat?
No.
You'd be surprised how many of them do on the night before the execution. Did he ever have the king's evil, scrofula? It destroys the neck muscles.
No.
No. Well, then, let's put it this way. Do you mind, Inspector? I'll just slip the noose over your head. There. Now, the object of hanging is to dislocate the cervical vertebrae here, between the atlas and the axis.
Oh.
Failing that, you ought to rupture the jugular vein.
Oh, I say.
Here, which works just as well, but is considerably messier. Oh,
good heavens.
To do the job right, the drop ought to provide a momentum of 2,600 pounds. Now, the simplest way to calculate your drop is to divide the number 539 by the convict's weight in stones. Now, you say this fellow weighed 11 stone. How much did his head weigh?
Hopkins?
Oh, I don't know, sir.
Well, one stone for the head is usually about right. You don't count the weight of the head, you see, because it's supported by the rope.
Good Lord.
Subtract one stone, divide 10 into 539, you get 5.39 feet. 5 feet, 5 inches will do the job very nicely.
And what would happen if he were dropped 6 feet, 9 inches?
Why, bless you, sir. That would rip his head clean off. Here you are, Inspector. I'll remove that noose now.
Oh, thank you.
Just as I thought. Father Titchborne could not have thrown himself out of his bedroom window. He was lowered slowly on the end of the rope.
Oh, what a ghastly way to kill a man.
Yet it is the method preferred by the state, Inspector. Mr. Berry, I am greatly in your debt.
It was my pleasure, sir. Good day to you, gentlemen all.
Inspector, I trust that you will convey this information to Miss Titchborne.
Oh, yes, sir. As a matter of fact, we're having lunch together.
You're beginning to remind me of Dr. Watson. In his younger days, he regularly fell in love with our female clients.
Only with one, Holmes.
I know, Watson. Your dearest Mary. Inspector, I beg you to bring Miss Titchborne to Baker Street tonight at 8 o'clock. I propose to undertake a small experiment that should be of interest to you both.
Yes, sir. Miss Titchborne, tonight at 8 o'clock.
So, once again I enter the lists against the most diabolical criminal genius the world has ever known. Doctor.
Yes?
I'm hungry.
Oh.
What do you say to a brace of woodcock and a bottle of Clos de Vougeot?
Capital. I'll see to it at once.
And I shall compose my telegram to Moriarty. Journeys end in lovers' meetings. Good evening, Professor.
It was most kind of you to invite me, Master Sherlock.
Permit me to take your hat and your walking stick.
Thank you.
I perceive that you have made some small improvement in your air gun. Forgive me, your walking stick. It is 9 ounces lighter than the old model.
8 1/2.
Capital. No noise, no smoke, no gunpowder burns. You must find it extremely useful.
Extremely. A hair-trigger revolver such as yours is an awkward thing to carry in a coat pocket, Master Sherlock.
Awkward, but comforting. If it bothers you, I'll put it on the table.
It seems like only yesterday that I watched you galloping across the Yorkshire moors on your pony.
Do you know, I believe that I detested you then even more than I detest you now.
Oh, dear me, I came here tonight truly hoping that we could let bygones be bygones. I bear you no ill will. In fact, I'm proud of you as an old pupil. There is room in England for us both.
At last count, you had tried to murder me 6 times.
7, my dear fellow.
7?
Do you recall the time when you were nearly run down by a train outside Nottingham?
You succeeded in outwitting me on 2 occasions then.
Two?
Nottingham and Reichenbach. The man you sent to the falls could have been your twin.
He was far stronger than I, but alas, not quite clever enough.
Would you care for a glass of brandy?
An excellent suggestion. By the by, how did you ascertain that I was still among the living?
In the same way that the hound picks up the scent of the fox.
You are incurably boyish, Master Sherlock. It is at once your weakness and your strength.
Oh, dear me.
Oh, permit me.
Thank you. Careless of me.
I rarely permit myself such indulgences, but this is a very special occasion. It is not every day that a man returns from the dead. If you were a lesser man, you would have switched our glasses while I picked up the stopper of the decanter on the assumption that I had poisoned your drink.
Tut, Professor.
But being Master Sherlock Holmes, you would have deduced that I poisoned my own drink on the assumption that you would exchange it for yours.
You insult my intelligence, Professor. Had you wished to poison me, you would have put the venom in my glass, thinking I should expect it to be in yours. Capital.
And yet you drink from it.
Of course. At present, you have no reason to kill me.
And now that we've had our little joke on one another, let us get down to a discussion of important matters. You said in your telegram that... Is this some sort of trap? I have only to shout, and this room will be filled with armed men.
Tut, Professor, your nerves are not what they once were. That is Dr. Watson bringing our guests.
Then I shall leave you at once. I wish you a very good night.
What, and miss an opportunity to meet His Eminence? Cardinal Tosca, may I present Professor James Moriarty?
Your Eminence, Professor.
And now, between his darkness and his brightness, there passed a glance of singular politeness.
Professor?
Your servant, Dr. Watson. Mm.
Inspector Hopkins of Scotland Yard.
How do you do? How do you do, sir?
Inspector.
And Miss Violet Tichborne.
How do you do?
Your servant.
The professor is about to depart. It is most unfortunate that he will not be present to observe the results of our small experiment with the blood of Lucifer.
I have changed my mind. I shall stay.
Excellent. And now, Hopkins, if you will be so kind as to assist me.
Oh, yes, of course, sir.
For God's sake, Holmes, take care. You know what happened to me with those candles.
Indeed. Miss Tichborne, if you will be seated, I now propose to demonstrate how your brother was driven mad.
Find my brother's murderer and point him out to me, Mr. Holmes. I shall do the rest.
It's a matter for the law, Violet.
And for God.
Neither God nor the law saved Chittiac Tichborne.
Perhaps you'd use my knife on these candles, Doctor.
Yes, of course.
Hopkins, yes, help me to move this table.
Oh, yes, sir.
Brussels is a very curious city, Miss Tichborne. At first glimpse, one would think it a city made from sweetmeats and gingerbread, and yet underneath it all there is corruption equal to any in Marseille.
Forgive me, I don't understand.
It is I who should apologize. I'm not accustomed to conversing with young ladies.
I have never been in Brussels.
Should you ever choose to go there, I have no doubt you will be presented at court.
I'll talk with you later.
I rather thought you might wish to.
Do we need anything else, Mr. Holmes?
I rather believe we are ready to proceed. I beg you to stay well back. As for me, I shall light the candles, sit down here, and breathe very deeply. Pray watch for any changes in my appearance or behavior.
The candles have been trimmed for maximal effect. We won't have long to wait. What do you say, Holmes? The drug is taking effect.
The drug? What drug?
Holmes will explain later.
The murderer is in this room.
What
in
this room? Who is he?
This has gone far enough. I'm going to blow out that candle.
Say where you are, all of you.
Holmes, for the love of God.
I warn you, this gun is loaded.
Holmes.
Mr. Holmes!
Stop! Stay back! Miss Tichborne! I have kept my promise and found your brother's murderer.
You haven't said which of us it is.
It's a delusion, Professor. Can't you see that? He doesn't know what he's saying.
It's no delusion. There he stands. The false priest, Tosca.
What? You! Tosca.
My poor Holmes.
You have betrayed our friendship and you have betrayed your God.
You found your murderer, Mr. Holmes. I'll see that he's brought to justice. You don't need that gun now.
I am your prisoner, Inspector.
Come, Mr. Holmes. It's all right. You can give me your pistol now.
Don't move.
The gun, Mr. Holmes.
I warned you.
All right, Hopkins.
Yes.
Please, old friend.
No friend of yours.
Your evidence!
It's better this way. At least I've saved him from the gallows.
Put your own neck in a noose, it would appear.
Your revolver, Mr. Holmes. Doctor, see to the cardinal.
Yes, of course.
Is he badly hurt?
He's dead.
Do you mind, Doctor? I'd like to see for myself. Dear me. It's quite true, Master Sherlock. He is dead.
There will now be a short intermission before we return to the incredible murder of Cardinal Tosca.
Thank you.
And now, on Festival Theatre, we return to the incredible murder of Cardinal Tosca.
Turned to lead within me as Inspector Hopkins put the handcuffs on Sherlock Holmes' wrists. I had myself experienced the horrible effects of the drug. Under its influence, I had in fact attempted to kill Holmes with my saber. Now I had pronounced Cardinal Tosca dead. I stood benumbed as the inspector led Holmes away, and it was not until I stumbled to a window in hope that fresh air might reawaken my senses that I was reminded that other matters demanded my attention. The gas street lamps were misty splotches in the dense, drizzly fog that had by now descended. Hopkins and his prisoner, Holmes, had left in a hansom for the Bow Street cells. Then, dimly, through the damp fog, I saw a sight that brought a cry of warning to my lips. Professor Moriarty's carriage, and Moriarty assisting a passenger to enter it. His passenger was Miss Violet Tichborne. My every instinct impelled me to prevent her from falling into Moriarty's hands. Pausing only long enough to arm myself with my old service revolver, I ran downstairs, almost colliding with the police constables who had come to take away the cardinal's body. More strange and hideous events were shortly to unfold, both in the foggy streets of the great city and in the mortuary situated beneath Sherlock Holmes' cell.
Where's that blooming light? Dark as a morgue in here. Well, tis a morgue. Place gives me the creeps. Well, it's a living we have to worry about, not the dead. Hey, mate, switch on the light, will ya? Thanks. And lend a hand here, eh? Oh, sorry, Inspector.
Step lively, Constable. Sir George Atkinson will be here any minute.
Ed Gaffer himself, eh? He's not going to like being called away from his state reception. I knew this would be a big one.
Oh, yes, a big one indeed.
There's something ruddy horrible about it, though. It seems so permanent, if you get my meaning, sir.
Oh, what are you talking about?
Being short ain't so bad. Though I'll warrant that arm of yours will hurt like blue blazes tomorrow.
Oh, you're probably right.
Hope you're luckier than a mate of mine. He got it in the arm same as you did. Gangrene set in. They sawed his arm off.
Oh, really?
Still, you can't compare losing your arm with losing your...
Hopkins? Yes, Sir George?
Stop!
Hopkins, do you know what you've interrupted?
Oh, yes, sir, but it's a shocking business.
I should say it is. One of the grand panjandrums of the Popish Church, shot to death by England's most famous detective. Is Holmes in a cell?
Yes, sir, upstairs.
How did it happen?
Well, Holmes undertook a scientific experiment as part of our investigation into the Tichborne case. To test the effect of a drug, he took it himself.
Damned silly thing to do.
Well, he must have miscalculated. It drove him mad. He picked up his revolver and killed the cardinal.
I gather he also winged you.
Oh, it's only a flesh wound, sir.
Don't take any chances with it.
Yes, sir.
That's the same advice as I gave him, sir.
Is it indeed? Hopkins.
Sir?
I can't conceive of how you allowed yourself to be party to this wretched experiment. Sometimes I think that you Eton boys aren't a damn bit brighter than the old lot of detectives who started out on the pavement with a bullseye lantern in one hand and a truncheon in the other.
I've no excuse, sir.
Well, there's not a judge in England would hang Sherlock Holmes. But I shouldn't be at all surprised if he were sent to Broadmoor.
Oh, he'd rather hang than be locked up for life in an asylum for criminal lunatics.
I dare say he would. Is this the cardinal's body?
Most of it, sir.
What do you mean, most of it? Good Lord, he's been beheaded.
This can't be the body from Baker Street.
It's the body from Baker Street, right enough.
Why in the name of heaven didn't you tell me about this?
I thought you knew, sir.
You went upstairs immediately after I left with the prisoner?
I was in Mr. Holmes' rooms 2 minutes after you gave me my orders.
The cardinal's body oughtn't to have been left alone for 2 seconds. Hopkins... Don't you know what will happen when the damned papists find out about this? There'll be riots in Dublin.
I'm a damned papist myself, sir.
Oh. Sorry, old chap. Damned silly thing for me to say. But you know what those bloody Fenians are like. This will be more grist for their mill. Another chance for them to stab the Empire in the back. Whoever that is, Constable, get rid of them.
Yes, sir.
Hopkins.
Yes, sir.
We have a problem.
Oh, yes, sir.
If the news of this gets out, I...
You can't come in here.
I'm Dr. Watson.
I don't care if you're Dr. Livingstone.
It's all right, Constable.
Right, sir.
Doctor.
Yes.
Something horrible has happened.
Jones?
No, he's perfectly all right now. Look here, the Cardinal's body.
Oh, Sir George.
Dr. Watson.
I begin to understand why our ancestors hanged witches.
Then you think Satanists did this?
I'll wager 100 guineas that this is the work of damned devil worshippers. And further horrors may lay in store. Miss Stitchborn has disappeared.
Violet? When?
Within the hour.
Oh, but how?
Wait, Hopkins. Hello, what's this?
You've found something?
Yes. Something very singular indeed. The head was not cut off.
You're not making sense, Doctor. Of course it was.
No, it was torn. Literally torn from the body as if by some superhuman force.
Cool.
Sir George, you must consult Sherlock Holmes.
He's right, sir.
What will the newspapers say if the head of the CID seeks advice from a prisoner in the Bow Street cells?
Oh, Holmes is no ordinary prisoner.
What will the Home Secretary say if the CID fails to track down those responsible for this atrocity?
It can't be done.
What will Lord Salisbury say when the word reaches Downing Street that the body of a prince of the church has been desecrated by Satanists?
Constable, fetch Holmes.
Yes, sir.
Doctor, You said that Miss Titchborne had disappeared.
Yes, vanished into thin air. I fear that Moriarty may have abducted her.
Moriarty? Holmes has always had a bee in his bonnet about that fellow. There's never been a shred of evidence to back it up.
Moriarty is the most dangerous man in England.
Sir Holmes would have us believe. Hopkins, did you ever know the man to so much as swipe an apple from a street seller's barrow?
Oh, no, sir.
I thought not.
He has repeatedly tried to murder Sherlock Holmes.
And you have witnessed these attempts?
No, but I put unquestioning trust in the word of the best and wisest man I have ever known.
That does more credit to your friendship than to your intelligence, Doctor.
I'm inclined to agree with the doctor, Sir George.
Well, more fool you.
My dear Holmes.
My good Watson.
Well, Holmes, we've met under happier circumstances.
Yes. How's the arm, young Hopkins?
It's only a scratch, sir.
Yes.
I trust they've been treating you well upstairs.
I've been amusing myself by arm wrestling with my cellmate, an old acquaintance named Mouser Warwick, who's been incarcerated as the result of a small domestic altercation in which he is alleged to have bitten off the end of his mistress's nose.
Oh. It's disgraceful that you should be forced to share a cell with such a blackguard.
But, Doctor, the Mouser is an entertaining fellow in his own way. It's true that he doesn't shine in conversation, but he's adept at arm wrestling and plays the best Jew's harp of any pickpocket in London.
You're a cool one, Mr. Holmes. In your position, I'd be tearing my hair.
I'm a creature of pure logic, Inspector. Emotions of any kind are alien to me.
What does your pure logic make of this?
Dear me.
Dr. Watson believes this was done by Satanists.
A very plausible explanation.
Oh, is there any other?
There are at least 6 possible reasons for removing the head of a corpse. One, for use in some satanic ceremony, as Dr. Watson has suggested. 2, it contains something of value. I once knew a valet who cut off his master's head to obtain the gold fillings in his teeth.
Oh.
3, and most commonly, it could be the first act in the complete dismemberment of the body for convenient disposal. Yes. Committing murder is child's play compared with getting rid of the corpse. 4, it could be a means of preventing the victim from being identified. 5, it could be the work of a cannibal.
Oh, not in England, surely.
There was such a case in Yorkshire in 1878. The murderer added onions, carrots, and potatoes to the stew.
Oh, sir.
And, if memory serves, a dash of Worcester sauce. 6, it could be a joke.
Preposterous.
Not at all. Contrary to popular belief, the average murderer has a very acute sense of humor. I've seldom met one who did not chuckle as he described his crime. You may remember what Mr. Bernard Shaw said of the late lamented Jack the Ripper. He had an excellent sense of fun. The trouble was he didn't know when to stop.
I don't see how any of this pertains to the present case, except perhaps the Satanism.
We've got another riddle to unravel as well, Mr. Holmes.
And what is that, pray?
Miss Tichborne has disappeared.
Indeed.
She left Baker Street with Moriarty in his carriage.
You call that a disappearance?
Pray let me continue. I hailed a hansom and followed.
Followed? For what reason?
If you knew the truth about Moriarty, you wouldn't have to ask that question. The carriage stopped at last in Spitalfields.
Even we coppers don't like to go there alone at night.
Beside a graveyard.
Itchy Park, we call it.
I leapt from my cab, drew my revolver, ran to Moriarty's carriage and flung open the door. It was empty. And the coachman was dead upon his box.
An empty carriage with a dead coachman parked in front of a graveyard. Hmm? All the picture lacks is Moriarty's signature.
But how could a dead coachman have driven a carriage across London?
Doubtless Moriarty had so arranged matters that the coachman would live as long as he kept driving and die the moment that he stopped.
Yes, but how?
I could give you a round dozen possible ways in which it could have been managed with curare.
Curare?
The poison which South American Indians affixed to their darts.
What reason could Moriarty have for murdering his coachman?
My dear Sir George, Moriarty thinks no more of murder than you'd think of swatting a fly. The coachman may have talked too much, or he may have merely known too much. It's quite possible that he simply wasn't a very good coachman.
But, Doctor, What happened to Violet?
Oh, I don't know. The carriage was never out of my sight.
You see, Doctor, but you do not observe. Huh? Was there a four-wheeler in Baker Street when you took up your pursuit?
Well, there are always four-wheelers in Baker Street.
I suggest to you that at the moment when Moriarty's coachman whipped up his horses, one of those four-wheelers stood precisely parallel with his carriage.
By Jove, you're right.
Moriarty and Miss Tichborne merely stepped in one door of the carriage and out the other, on the opposite side. They then boarded the four-wheeler, which Moriarty must have engaged for just such a purpose.
Precisely.
He must have drugged her. Otherwise, she'd have resisted and called for help.
Pshaw!
She probably went quite willingly.
Nonsense. If you'll forgive my saying so, Sir George.
Why is it nonsense, Doctor? Did he force her into the carriage in the first place?
No, she went with him willingly, but she had no way of knowing the man to be a villain.
Nor have I any evidence that he is a villain.
Why should an innocent man go to such lengths to elude pursuit?
Professor Moriarty and Miss Tichborne may merely have found the good doctor's attentions tiresome.
But the dead coachman!
Can you swear, as a physician, that he did not die of natural causes, save an apoplexy?
No.
No.
You searched the carriage, of course.
Yes, of course. It contained nothing, except for this.
Ah, a religious medal. But unlike any other I've ever seen.
A trinket dropped by Miss Tichborne tells us nothing.
Oh, have a look out.
Good Lord. I scarcely think that the lady would wear the insignia of the Grand Master of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre, an office traditionally held by the Austro-Hungarian Emperor. Sir George, you must release me immediately.
Have you forgotten that you've been charged with murder?
If I'm not set free at once, Europe may undergo its greatest catastrophe since the 30 Years' War.
I can scarcely release a man charged with murder on the strength of his knowledge of Austro-Hungarian heraldry and European history.
If you'd only explain yourself, Mr. Holmes, I'm sure that Sir George would listen to reason.
There isn't time for that. It may already be too late for me to prevent the greatest crime of the 19th century.
Holmes, I'll be frank. We've never been friends. I don't like your methods. You've committed burglaries. You've allowed murderers to walk away scot-free.
You've no proof of that.
No. But you know as well as I do that I've spoken the truth. Holmes has always considered himself to be above the law.
I often think that I may have caused more human anguish by enforcing the law than those I've apprehended caused by breaking it. But what has this to do with your refusal to release me?
Everything. I believe in the law. It's all very well for you to talk mysteriously about European catastrophes, but the fact remains that whatever may have happened to the coachman and Miss Tichborne and whoever it was that desecrated the Cardinal's body, it was you who killed Cardinal Tosca. You were there, Hopkins. You saw it. Can you deny that?
Well, I'm afraid not.
Until now, I hadn't realized how confoundedly inconvenient it is to be incarcerated.
Constable?
Yes, sir?
Return the prisoner to his cell.
Come along, sir.
I see no point in continuing this conversation any further, Hopkins.
Yes, sir.
Charlie the Rat I am. Rat is me name and rats is me racket.
Good heavens, Holmes, that's...
Shh!
Hopkins, remove that man.
You'll have to wait outside.
Oh, I've got work to do here.
No, outside.
Well, what would the coroner say if there's rat bites on his corpses?
Out! Don't stand there nittering, Inspector. Get rid of the dog.
Yes, sir.
I know my duty. Rat catcher in ordinary to His Majesty's God bless her cells in Bow Street. That's who I am.
Good God.
And that takes in this here mortuary. I've got the papers to prove it. They give me and my pole as much right to be here as you have.
Constable, help the inspector.
Yes, sir.
There's one!
Where?
Be careful with that damn pole.
There! Oh, Mr. Blider.
Blimey, they're quick on their feet.
Yeah, did you ever see the like of it?
Never in my life.
This is intolerable, Hopkins.
Right! See the size of that one?
Watch the light.
Prisoner!
Yes, sir, if I can find him.
Ah, there.
It's me, you bloody imbecile.
Oh, Hopkins, get a light.
Oh, right, sir. Right, sir.
Run, Holmes! Don't be a fool, Doctor. Holmes, you haven't got a chance.
Quickly, Holmes, in here.
Where's that damn light? Don't let him get away.
Here, sir.
Oh, that's better, sir. It's about time. Well, don't just stand there, man. Check the upper levels.
Yes, sir.
Constable.
Sir.
Do those old gas jets work?
Yes, sir, I suppose so, sir.
Then light them.
Yes, sir.
And you... I ought to charge you with assisting the escape of a criminal.
Oh, this place would be overrun with rats in no time if it weren't for old Charlie.
Doctor, you'd have served your friend much better by preventing his escape.
Perhaps.
Constable.
Sir.
Come with me.
Right, sir.
We'll search the tunnels.
Yes, sir.
You can't have got far.
No, sir.
You go ahead of me with the light.
Right, sir.
Oh, Your Eminence! There wasn't a sign of life in your body when I examined it in Baker Street.
Among other things, the sachems in the Brazilian jungles taught me the art of temporarily stopping the heart.
But how did you arrange this thing?
Well, you was out for your grub, the rat catcher popped back to Baker Street.
I see. And what was the purpose of this monstrous charade?
We wish to give Moriarty a false sense of security. As far as he knows, one hound is dead and the other caught in a trap.
Do you mean that Holmes is in one of those drawers?
Quite so, old chap.
Good Lord.
Confoundedly uncomfortable they are, although I suspect that nobody else has ever made that complaint.
Holmes, this is almost unforgivable. You don't trust me with your confidences, even after all the years we've been together. I was led to believe that your madness was real. Tricked into thinking that the Cardinal had died at your hands. And I suppose that all the time you were laughing at me for being such a fool.
My dear old boy, I should never laugh at you. But among your innumerable talents, guile finds no place. You are the most thoroughly honest man I've ever known. If I told you, Moriarty would have seen through you like a pane of glass.
Oh.
Now, it's time for me to vacate the premises.
I think you'll find everything you need in my bag.
Thank you, Your Eminence.
Oh, another disguise, eh, Holmes?
Yes. Hold this wig for a moment, would you?
Oh, yes, certainly. Now, tell me, what was the purpose of the headless body?
The professor's spies are everywhere, even at Scotland Yard.
Ah. Where'd the poor fellow come from?
From the mud bank under Blackfriars Bridge. He had tied one end of a rope to a rail and the other around his neck, and then jumped. God rest his soul.
I ought to have conjectured as much.
Well, the skirt fits.
Yes. I should roll up the trouser legs, Holmes.
Yes. You've done very well, though, Doctor. Oh. You've established that the Emperor Franz Joseph is in England. Look at this medal, Your Eminence.
Yes. And this ribbon goes with it. It was found by one of our agents at Dover, dropped by a masked prisoner. The brave old man has left a trail for us.
A masked prisoner, you say? Surely in these times another disguise would have aroused less suspicion.
Not at all. It is common on the continent and not unusual in England for the police to force a criminal whom they are escorting to don a mask. The shawl, please. Thank you. Did you find Moriarty's lair, Your Eminence?
Yes. And it was where you expected it to be. I also learned that the assassin and torturer, Fu Teng, is expected in London today.
Fu Teng? Our paths have crossed before. A very dangerous gentleman. With his arrival, the games will begin in earnest.
An initiation, perhaps, and most certainly a sacrifice.
Whose initiation, pray? And what sacrifice?
The initiation of Miss Violet Tichborne into Moriarty's coven of Satanists.
Yes, indeed.
Good Lord!
And the sacrifice of the Emperor. What could be more pleasing to Satan?
How can I help prevent these horrors?
First, a little ash from your pipe for my face. There. I take it that you're not averse to disturbing the peace, committing a public mischief, trespassing and confounding a felony?
Not in a just cause.
Then you will greatly oblige me by purchasing as many fireworks as can be carried conveniently on the underground by the Baker Street Irregulars.
Who, pray, are the Baker Street Irregulars?
Street urchins who know London better than any copper and can go anywhere without being noticed. They are my eyes and ears. Tonight's commission should be to their taste. Provide them, Watson, with giant firecrackers, skyrockets, Roman candles, anything in that line. The noisier, the better.
Right.
You will set them off at precisely midnight tonight. Midnight, mark you, in the underground railway system.
Where in the system?
Holderness Street Station.
Quickly, they're coming. Holmes, you're awake.
Well, thank you.
What? You're still here? Get out of my way, you
No, look here, Gov. It's all right.
And who the deuce is this woman?
How dare you talk to my husband like that?
Husband? This is too much.
Oh, no, love. The gentleman's just having his old joke.
Didn't sound funny to me.
Get them out of here, Hopkins, for God's sake.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Come on.
Get your hands off me.
Oh, please, madam. Please.
My husband is as good a man as any knob in London. We've got 10 little nippers to prove it.
Oh, well, I do my best, love.
That you do, Jackie.
It's like that song says. The one Lily sings.
It's the rich what gets the driving. It's the poor what gets the lying. It's the sign the whole world over. I did all the blooming shine.
I take it that you're happy that Holmes got away, Doctor.
Very happy.
I shouldn't be if I were you. He'll be damned lucky to come out of this alive.
But there is no Holiness Street Station. It was blown up by the Fenians.
What's that you say?
Now, what did Holmes say? When you have eliminated the impossible, what remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth.
Having applied Holmes' methods, it seemed crystal clear to me why he wished me and his barefoot street urchins to provide a distraction at a place that did not exist. Not only had the Holderness Street Underground Station been blown up, but a section of the tunnel leading to it had been subsequently sealed off. Little did the clerks and typewritists riding to and from work on what was soon to be known as the Tube dream that within a few hundred yards of them there existed a subterranean Whitehall, the seat of government for a criminal empire. There, amid luxuries that would have been the envy of a Maharaja, surrounded by priceless works of art, served by slaves like a sultan of Turkey, equipped with the most modern instruments of communication, ruled the former professor of mathematics, Moriarty. Moriarty, of whom it might have been said that by grace of the devil he was king of the underworld. There his staff officers gave out his orders and rewarded or punished his underlings. The punishments were more frequent than the rewards, and they were swift and stern.
Dashwood here. Has Fu Tang arrived? Let me know the instant that he does. Very well. Carl?
Man here.
Mother Midnight and Burlstone are in the anteroom.
Ach, so.
Do they know why the professor sent for them? Good. Are they sweating? He's got the wind up. She's playing it artful.
So?
Send her in first. This ought to be entertaining, Carl.
Good evening, Colonel.
Good evening, Mother Midnight. Carl, where are your manners? Pray, assist the lady.
Yeah, mynheer.
Thank you.
Are you comfortable?
I'd be more comfortable if I knew why you sent for me, Colonel.
Good. I admire directness in a woman. I will be equally frank. The professor believes you to be dissatisfied with your present business arrangements with him.
He has been misinformed.
Then why have you been providing him with false inventories?
My books may not be quite up to date. I deal in a commodity with a high rate of depreciation. Stock has to be replenished continuously. Tastes change. My clients are becoming increasingly sophisticated in their requirements.
Let me read you what you have listed here. Number 44, Lowland Scottish Presbyterian background. Age 36, no special skills. Do you deny that number 44 is, in fact, two blonde, 18-year-olds, Circassian twins with very extraordinary skills indeed?
An accounting error.
One of many, it would seem. You value the services of this fictitious Scots wench at £150 a month. I venture to guess that those two little Circassian morsels are worth 20 times as much.
No. I must allow for higher operating costs and faster depreciation. And they're not to everyone's taste. Only a few gentlemen wish an entire meal of caviar.
You've been cheating us, Mother.
No!
Yes! And if you continue to deny it, I shall lose my patience. And when I lose my patience, Carl finds that his hands start to itch. And when Carl's hands start to itch...
Oh, sweet God, this has been the first time.
Make sure that it is the last. Carl, bring in Birlstone.
Yeah, mine here.
Then I can go.
You will oblige me by staying a few minutes longer.
In here, Shrine. Good day to you, Carol.
I suspect you've already made the acquaintance of Mr. Birlstone, also known as the King of the Beggars. It's very unwise to go anywhere in London without first obtaining Mr. Birlstone's permission.
Unwise and unhealthy, eh?
Quite so. Mr. Birlstone commands as scurvy a mob of bully bucks as ever wagged hemp in the wind. It is scarcely necessary to say that the professor is his silent partner. Until recently, the relationship had been, for the most part, both profitable and congenial. Professor Moriarty regrets that you have elected to terminate it, Birlstone.
Well, break up our partnership, you mean? I wouldn't dream of a colonel, no.
More than 20 men are employed here in these underground headquarters. Every one of them a thief, a murderer, or both. Yet, this is the only place in this great city where a man may lay down his purse anywhere, anywhere, mark you, and be certain that it will be there when he returns for it. We do not steal from each other, Mr. Birlstone. And above all, we do not swindle Moriarty.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You cheated the professor once before.
No, that was a long time ago, and I paid him back to the last farthing.
You have cheated him for the second time.
No.
Yes. And you shall pay to the last farthing once again.
Yeah, yeah.
This time, however, it will be necessary for you to pay interest on your debt.
Well, you just say how much.
All.
Well, every penny I got.
Everything you've got.
Oh.
Carl?
Yeah, mine. Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, have mercy. Please, please. Look. Look, you can have these.
A moment, Carl.
Look.
Such beautiful pearls.
Ah, beautiful pearls, look.
Now, Carl. I trust you found that instructive, Mother Midnight.
Yes.
You may go.
Thank you. Thank you.
Carl?
Yeah, mine here.
Take that thing away.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. I was looking for Professor Moriarty.
Ah, my dear Miss Titchborne. I am Colonel Dashwood, the professor's associate. I trust your quarters are comfortable.
More than comfortable. Luxurious.
The professor thought it appropriate to put you in the same room as the Mona Lisa.
How gallant of him. It's a remarkable reproduction.
It is not a reproduction. Would you care for a cigarette?
Thank you.
Which gives Moriarty greater pleasure? Contemplating Leonardo's masterpiece or reflecting that he's made fools of the art experts in the Louvre?
I doubt that either affords him as much enjoyment as the knowledge that something irreplaceable is his to preserve or destroy as he pleases.
When may I talk with him? I must get back to my hotel. Inspector Hopkins will be looking for me. I took a great risk in coming here.
Why did you come?
I believe that Moriarty knows who killed Chidiac Titchborne.
Holmes accused Tosca.
No, Holmes was insane when he made that accusation.
Well, what makes you think the professor can help you?
There's not a murder in England that escapes Moriarty's attention.
What if he should be the very man you're looking for?
No. No, the man who killed Chidiac was a fool. Moriarty would no more have hanged him from a window than he tried to sell the Mona Lisa to the British Museum.
Do you take me for a fool?
I know nothing about you.
No woman shall ever make a fool out of me. I assure you of that.
Please, Henry, you're hurting me.
You even succeeded in making a fool out of Sherlock Holmes with your masquerade as the priest's sister. A demure little maiden with her rosary and her bowl of soup. The angel of the sick room. They had another name for you in Brussels. What was it?
La Violette Anglaise.
The young officers called you that. To the ladies at court, you were the English whore. Under the protection, a charming phrase that, of no less a personage than the Count of Flanders. I'd have thought that easier work than your present vocation of impersonating the heiress to Titchborne Castle.
The Count died. Without his friendship, I was no longer welcome at court.
There are several things I'm curious about. Did you murder Titchborne's real sister?
Full time, monsieur, mein Herr.
Good. Bring him in.
Yeah, mein Herr.
You'll wish to talk with your guest in private. Now, if you'll tell me where to find Moriarty...
He'll find you. Besides, you must meet Fu Teng. He is a great artist. Fu Teng is to murder what Bach was to music, and to torture what Goethe was to literature. I should be a bad host if I didn't introduce you.
Very well, if you insist. Chidiac's sister wasn't murdered. She drowned in a yachting accident.
So you didn't kill her. Pity. Fu Teng, at last we meet. This is a very great honor indeed.
The honor is mine, Colonel. Beneath the streets of London, you have rebuilt the palace of Kublai Khan.
The professor likes to be comfortable. May I introduce another of our guests, Miss Titchborne?
Madame?
How do you do? The Colonel tells me that you're an artist. I must confess my ignorance of your work.
Mine is a small gift, although a useful one.
I fear that tonight's activities may be a bit coarse for your tastes.
Tonight's activities?
The professor numbers among his menials a coven of Satanists, fools but useful to him. He wishes you to entertain them.
In what manner?
By officiating at a sacrifice. I shall be there spouting a pack of ballyhooly bog Latin.
Bog Latin?
Vidibam satanam sicut vulgar de colu cadentem.
I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven.
Oh. Clever lady. Does our talk of a sacrifice arouse your curiosity?
Your talk of Satanism does?
I rather thought that it would.
Satanists murdered Chidiac.
You continue to arouse my curiosity, dear lady. I keep asking myself, why should you care a fig who killed the priest? What was he to you, after all? Not your brother? Not your lover?
No!
Then why this thirst for revenge?
A personal matter? You're breaking my arm!
I will break every bone in your body if you don't tell me the truth. Now, you fooled Holmes, and I think you fooled Moriarty as well.
You're mad!
You made Holmes believe you were the sweet little sister. You made Moriarty believe you were an adventuress impersonating an heiress. I want to know who you really are.
Surely no one deceives Professor Moriarty. Least of all, a mere woman.
This is no ordinary woman. I strongly suspect her to be an agent of the Pope's secret service.
No, I'm certain you're mad.
If she truly is one of the Pope's agents, you are wasting your time. She will tell you nothing.
You were Titchborne's partner. Now, how much did he know? And how much of it did he pass on to Holmes?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Fu Teng, I've been told that in your hands, even those born mute will acquire the ability to speak.
I am unworthy such praise.
Use the knives on her.
Oh, my God.
The 1,000 knives?
Yes.
That is reserved for those who have committed the most grievous offenses against the Manchu Emperor himself. You are not suggesting that I demean myself by inflicting it upon this woman.
Good heavens, Colonel. Would you have asked Bach to play a tune on a penny whistle?
Must I remind you, Fu Teng, of the terms of the alliance between your master and mine?
I stand rebuked. You are my host. It would be ungracious of me to refuse your request.
Carl,
hold her.
How can I tell you what you want to know if you kill me?
Death only comes with the 1,000th cut. You'll talk long before that.
In my country, we often call this simply the death. It combines science and art. The cuts must always be made in the same sequence. Each has a name. Number one is called the butterfly. Number two, the grasshopper. There, you see?
They look to me like mere scratches.
Number three, the locust.
Damn you!
Oh, yes. Yes, I begin to see the pattern.
The cuts are divided into four classes of 250 each. Each of the four classes is named for an element of the universe. Air, fire, water, or earth. Those which you have seen are cuts of the air, affecting chiefly the skin, and to a lesser degree, the nerve ends. Next come the cuts of the fire. Number five, the serpent. These involve the muscles, and a little later, the smaller bones. Number six.
Wait!
I take it that you wish to tell me something.
Yes, everything.
Splendid. But first, let us see cut number six.
No, make him stop, please.
Number six, the hornet.
My congratulations, Fu Teng. Poor little lady. Release her, Carl.
Yeah, mine here.
I regret that it was necessary to punish you so severely. Still, you've been a deceitful wench, haven't you? Well, shall we talk about the Pope's secret service?
I know nothing about that. You must believe me.
Fu Teng.
No, listen. I was born on the Tichborne estate.
The daughter of General Sir Plunkett Tichborne, the hero of Balaclava?
The daughter of a servant and of a father unknown. I grew up with Chidiac and his sister, studying their ways, imitating them. Presuming above my station, my mother called it. And then, when I was 15, Chidiac and I fell in love.
And, of course, the old general learned of this relationship.
There was no relationship. We were as innocent as children. But you're right. The general found out. He paid me 10 guineas to leave the country. 10 guineas. And I thought it was a fortune. But not long afterwards, Chidiac entered a seminary in Rome.
While you adopted a very different profession.
What choice did I have? A servant without references.
And you went from the streets to the palace of the Count of Flanders.
Yes. I made myself unworthy of Chidiac's love as he had made himself superior to mine. But when I learnt that he was sick, alone, and in disgrace, I had to go to him.
You should have your story set to music. It would fill the halfpenny seats in the music halls with sobbing kitchen maids.
It's the truth.
Fu Teng, finish it. Carl? No. The knives would take too long. Use your bowstring.
Ah, yes.
Oh, wait. I can spy on Inspector Hopkins for you. He's in love with me. And Holmes, he treats him like a son.
Ah!
Enough!
Dear me, Colonel, what have you been up to? Release her. You may go, Carl.
Yeah, Professor.
My dear Miss Violet, like many old soldiers, the Colonel has an unfortunate propensity for indulging in rather tasteless practical jokes.
So I've observed.
Dare I assume that I have the privilege of addressing the great Fu Teng?
your servant, Lord.
Colonel, I thought I had made it quite clear that I wished to be informed immediately of our distinguished guest's arrival.
I got a bit carried away. It won't happen again.
Dear me, I should hope not.
I bring you greetings from the Tengku Kangte, Lord of the Five Tongues.
May he live for 1,000 years.
The Tengku Kangte begs that you accept this trifling gift.
Oh, such a beautiful box. Thank you.
You may recall that the Tengku's brother opposed our alliance.
He said he'd rather have his eyes torn out of his head than sign a treaty with the foreign devils.
You will perceive that his preference was respected.
Oh. Oh, my God. Such generosity leaves me speechless.
Yeah, Professor. They've caught a spy.
Oh, please excuse me for a moment, Fu-Tang. A spy? Where?
In the ruins of the old station.
They killed him, of course.
No, Colonel. They knocked him out.
Excellent. Bring him here at once.
Yeah. Yeah, Professor.
My dear Colonel, when will you learn that the object of the game is not to sweep your opponent's pawns and pieces off the board, but to checkmate him? So, Dr. Watson. Was he alone, Carl?
Yeah.
Are you certain?
There was nobody else. Only a few children.
Master Sherlock's absurd band of 10-year-old ragamuffins. They need not concern us. Double the guard at all the entrances.
Here. Here, Professor.
Moriarty. I've failed, Holmes. Miss Violet, what have these scoundrels done to you?
I'm all right, Dr. Watson.
Watson, the faithful old collie striving to transform himself into a bloodhound, asking himself at every step of the way, what would Holmes do if he were here? And always coming up with the wrong answer, yet struggling on, refusing to admit defeat.
Better defeat in a good cause than victory in a bad one.
You speak as a citizen of a country that has not suffered a real defeat in 1,000 years. Such words do not come so easily to the lips of my countrymen.
Well spoken, Fu-Tang. It is time that you and I talked of the great tasks that await us.
Ah, yes.
Do you think this is wise, Professor?
Are you questioning my methods, Colonel?
No. But what about Watson and the girl?
I feel that Dr. Watson and Miss Titchbourne have earned the right to a glimpse into a future in which, unfortunately, they shall not participate.
I didn't know you were an astrologer, Professor.
I don't read the stars, dear lady. I rearrange them. Fu-Tang, what is your chief impression of Europe in this year of 1895?
Unlike China, you have many guns.
Yes, in Europe there are many guns and much hatred. The Austro-Hungarian Empire is detested by its nominal ally, Italy, and both loathed and feared by its neighbor, Russia. France thirsts for revenge against Germany. Germany despises France and is bitterly envious of England. And in the Balkans, every tuppenny-halfpenny principality seethes with hatred against every other tuppenny-halfpenny principality, and they all hate the Turks. As for guns, Germany alone can raise an army of 9 million men, and they have guns that will fire an 1,800-pound shell 9 miles.
It is an enormous boil, ripe for the lancet.
It's bad for the blood, like going too long without a woman. We've been at peace for too long.
You would be astonished how many Europeans share the Colonel's sentiments.
And you?
I am an impresario who was about to stage the greatest entertainment of his career.
We're going to see to it that the wogs go for each other's throats.
Oh, must you be so crude, Colonel?
He's merely a rabid dog. It's you who make my blood run cold.
Yet my desires are no different from other men's. Only more difficult to satisfy. I was born with an insatiable craving. At first I thought that what I wanted was great wealth, but I acquired great wealth and the craving remained. Then I thought that it was power that I craved. But when I achieved power, the craving did not lessen, but rather increased. Now I know that what I craved from the beginning was what every human being craves, to be entertained grandly. To escape, at least momentarily, from the insufferable boredom that has been inflicted upon us by the deity. Garden of Eden. Have you never thought that it may have been boredom that caused the fallen angels to join Lucifer's revolt in heaven? But forgive me. I digress. Whatever you may think of me, the fact remains that soon men will be on the march from Galicia to Flanders, because I, the greatest impresario in the history of mankind, have willed it to be so.
It would be madness for the nations of Europe to go to war. They're not populated by lunatics.
On the day that England declares war, there will be dancing in Trafalgar Square.
Never!
They'll dance because I, with a little assistance from their government, have rescued them, at least temporarily, from boredom. They'll march after death with songs on their lips.
You won't get away with it. Not even with the aid of your bogus emperor.
So you know about the emperor?
It no longer matters, Colonel.
But this means that Holmes must know as well.
Master Sherlock is in no position to interfere.
But not as long as he's locked in a cell in Bow Street. But what if he was...
Pray do not concern yourself with such matters, Colonel. The muscular contortions which accompany your attempts to think are distressing to watch. You are quite right, Doctor. Even an emperor cannot declare war at a whim. Nor will men admit, even to themselves, that they are going to war out of boredom. It is necessary that there be a martyr. I have chosen one. The Archduke Franz Ferdinand, heir presumptive to the throne of Austria-Hungary. It must appear that he was assassinated by a Serbian.
I still don't see how that
would stop me. That would do the trick. Within 24 hours, there'd be blood in the Danube. Austria would attack Serbia, Russia would come to Serbia's aid, Germany would issue an ultimatum to Russia. Within a week, the world would be on fire from cellar to garret.
Precisely. A world war. And with the assistance of my emperor, I shall elect a new pope. The Christians will serve me then as the Satanists serve me now. Who knows? Perhaps I shall undertake the job myself. Yes. The more I think about it, the more the idea appeals to me. I shall call myself Pope Alexander the Seventh, in deference to Pope Alexander the Sixth, Borgian, whose tastes were very similar to mine. I rather relish the thought of being addressed as Your Holiness. Dear me, yes. Answer it, Colonel.
Yes? The fool. He knows better than to come here. Is that so? Send him in. Another guest is about to join us. A gentleman of some distinction, with information that may surprise you.
What information? Who is it?
Sir George!
Moriarty? Holmes has escaped.
Has he indeed?
He got away early this morning. I came here as soon as I dared. I've ordered the entire CID to drop everything else and search for him.
So you're another of this villain's henchmen, Sir George.
Oh, not a henchman, Doctor. An associate. This is another of my associates, Sir George Atkinson, Fu Teng.
Your servant, Sir George.
How do you do? You don't seem to be worried about Holmes, Professor. Never underestimate the man.
We need not trouble ourselves about Master Sherlock.
How can you be sure of that?
I have merely to press the trigger of this revolver to have him join his ancestors.
Fu Teng is Holmes?
Heavens!
I assume it was Dr. Watson's arrival that gave me away.
But I couldn't possibly have betrayed you. I was completely taken in by your disguise.
My dear fellow, when the day comes that you see through one of my disguises, I shall indeed retire.
It was Master Sherlock's face, not yours, that betrayed him, Doctor. His concern for his friend. And yet, Holmes, I believe you'd have killed him rather than reveal yourself to be an impostor, just as you were prepared to kill the girl.
I'd pay any price to prevent you from turning Europe into a charnel house.
How I wish you were on my side. Together we could rule the world.
A world stripped of everything that I cherish.
A world which you have known as doomed. A time will come when men remember you as nothing more than a second Don Quixote.
There are worse fates.
How did you find this place?
I merely glanced at your boots during your visit to Baker Street. They were too clean.
What do you mean?
There's not a street in London where a man could live without getting horse manure on his boots. There was none on yours. Since you could scarcely make your home in a balloon, it was obvious that you'd set up headquarters in the underground.
How did you find the real Fu Teng?
Tut, Colonel. Even in a city with 3 million inhabitants, the gentleman was a trifle conspicuous.
May I ask what you've done with him?
Trussed him like a chicken and left him on the front steps of the Imperial Chinese Embassy. I gather that he's been rather unpopular there since his attempt to poison the Empress Dowager.
What are we going to do now, Moriarty?
Why, proceed with our sacrifice, of course.
I'd best get back to the yard.
I should prefer that you stay your departure. We may require your assistance in disposing of our guests.
I'm an old soldier, Moriarty, not an assassin.
Think of them as the casualties of war. Soon you'll be military dictator of the United Kingdom, the most powerful Englishman since Cromwell.
My congratulations, Sir George. You were paid a high price for your soul.
I'm willing enough to hang the bloody Reds and shoot a few Irishmen. But when it comes to murder,
especially the murder of a priest.
The priest was an accident.
The Colonel somewhat exceeded his authority in dealing with Father Titchborne.
Dashwood! Of course!
What possible re...
Restrain yourself, Miss Titchborne.
My mask!
I'll take that gun, Professor. No, Sir George. Watson!
Right, I'll have it. Look out, the girl!
No, Miss Titchborne!
Damn you, Colonel. This is from Chidiot Titchborne.
You bitch. I'll kill you.
Dead.
Both of them?
Yes.
Chidiot Titchborne is revenged.
White Queen takes Black King's pawn. Pawn takes White Queen. Checkmate. Your gun, if you please, Master Sherlock.
Ah.
But Holmes...
Don't move, Watson. That is no ordinary walking stick.
Tonight our Satanist friends will offer up 3 sacrifices to Beelzebub. Fetch me the Emperor, Sir George.
I've got to get out of here, Moriarty. I've been here far too long as it is.
Fetch me the Emperor.
Very well.
Times, I believe you're the devil himself, Professor.
That has been suggested.
Since I don't have my pipe, would you permit me a last cigarette?
Provided it is one of mine.
No, thank you. I'll do without.
Doctor?
No. Well, Holmes, old chap.
Here's your Emperor.
What an ungodly contraption.
The wooden mask is a replica of one which the inmates of certain British prisons are compelled to wear. It is said to be most effective in breaking the spirits of even the most case-hardened felons. In this instance, it has also served to conceal the identity of our august guest. Gentlemen, the Emperor. Unmask him, Sir George.
Your Majesty, have they injured you?
No, I am quite well.
I think you would be more comfortable if you removed those ridiculous side whiskers and that silly moustache, Your Eminence.
Tosca! But he's dead!
You fool, where is the Emperor?
At this moment, a closed carriage drawn by 6 fast horses is carrying his apostolic majesty to Dover, whence an armed yacht will bear him to Trieste.
You've had a busy time, Your Eminence.
Yes, and profitable.
Good God, Moriarty, where does this leave us?
A major setback indeed. Without the Emperor, the game is in stalemate. I must go elsewhere to set up new pieces on a different board. It will not surprise you to learn that I had the foresight to install an emergency exit.
A lift!
A one-man lift, Sir George.
Oh, good Lord!
Well, gentlemen, I must go.
To board an underground train which will carry you to safety, disguised as a blind street singer, a drunken old woman, or a nun with her rosary.
Precisely. I might add that I have taken the precaution of having every room and tunnel mined with dynamite, which will explode in exactly 17 seconds after my departure.
What about your followers?
Your Eminence may pray for their souls. But first, you had better pray for your friend Holmes. You have more lives than a cat, Master Sherlock. You would emerge from the rubble unscathed, just as you returned alive from the falls at Reichenbach.
Tut, Professor, your flattery embarrasses me.
Farewell, Master.
Watson, his gun!
Wait!
I have it!
To our next encounter, Master Sherlock.
Well done, old chap.
Yes, indeed. What now?
Only 17 seconds to live.
The situation is desperate, but not hopeless.
14!
A very pretty little problem.
Ah, of course.
Professor, to be certain the explosion will occur in precisely 17 seconds, it has to be worked by the same switch as the lift.
4 seconds!
I touch this cigarette to the wire and...
Amen.
The professor was right to be suspicious of these cigarettes. They're a very special brand of my own manufacture, with acid instead of tobacco.
Thank God it's over. Holmes, you've saved Europe.
Saved Europe? I wonder.
With Franz Josef back on his throne, he'll make certain that his empire doesn't start a war.
The Viennese will go on living to the melody of a Strauss waltz. And dear old England will remain peaceful and free. The fireworks. The Baker Street Irregulars. And right on time, too. A distraction for Moriarty's cohorts while we make our departure.
Good old Watson. You never fail me. You are the one fixed point in a changing world. And soon the world will change beyond our recognition. We have postponed the catastrophe, but it will come. If not in 5 years, then in 10. If not in 10 years, then in 20. The seas are rising, and soon there will be tidal waves such as we have never dreamed possible. And in the path of those waves, there will still stand this island. We shall be tested as never before, but by God, we shall endure. We shall endure even though this island be engulfed and swept away. This land of hedges and bright green fields could sink beneath the sea, and still there would remain forever bright in men's minds the memory of our England.
Sherlock Holmes read the future only too well on that night 19 years ago. I lay down my pen on what may prove to have been the darkest day in human history. Signed, John H. Watson, M.D. Dated, this 4th of August, 1914.
And with the guns of August rumbling in the wings, we leave the once enchanted land, whose hope and glory were greater than we seem able to muster these days. Watson's date, of course, is that of the final adventure in the Conan Doyle canon, his last bow. And everyone has always agreed that's no better time to say goodbye to Holmes and his world. Perhaps. Not forever, though. There's always that blessed dispatch box. The Incredible Murder of Cardinal Tosca was adapted for radio by Alden Nolan and Walter Learning, based on their stage original for Theatre New Brunswick. John Neville starred as Sherlock Holmes, Dan MacDonald was Dr. Watson, Vernon Chapman, Professor Moriarty, and David Bulger, Sir George Atkinson, repeating their roles from the original Fredericton production. Colin Fox was heard as Cardinal Tosca, and Patricia Collins as Violet Tichborne. Those old Holmesian favorites, Mrs. Hudson and Inspector Hopkins, were played by Flo Patterson and Bruce Armstrong, with Michael Hartley Robinson as Colonel Dashwood and William Fulton as the constable. Audio engineering was by Keith DeLong, with sound effects by Harold Porter and Carl Falkenham, and production assistance by Deborah Paysant. The Incredible Murder of Cardinal Tosca was produced and directed for CBC Stereo from Halifax by Elizabeth Fox. Executive producer for Festival Theatre is John Douglas. For the next 3 Mondays at this time, our companion series Festival Recital will feature works by composers as diverse as Franck, Ravel, Brahms, and Gershwin. 4 weeks from tonight, on Monday, August 28th, Festival Theatre returns to the air with one of the great classic comedies of the American theatre, Once in a Lifetime, the smash hit that launched the legendary collaboration of George S. Kaufman and Moss Hart. Midsummer is a time for madness, and there's nothing madder than this romp through a Hollywood Babylon of the golden 30s, terrified by the advent of the talkies. Be sure to join Julia Matto, Gordon Pinsent, and an all-star cast on August 28th for an experience that's, well, once in a lifetime. Until then, this is William Hutt for Festival Theater. Good night.